Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. President Joe Biden returns to Wisconsin for the first time since leaving the presidential race. Coming up, his message to voters. Plus, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. files a lawsuit to try and remove himself from the November ballot. And how Wisconsin's top education official defends lowering test standards for K-12 students. All that and more on Rewind for your week in review for September 6th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., we're going to start this week with President Joe Biden returning to the battleground state, which was his first visit since dropping out of the presidential race back in July. While he was here, he traveled to Westby, which is about 30 minutes from La Crosse, and he highlighted the administration's $7.3 billion investment to produce clean energy projects in rural communities. Now, this is a much larger push by President Biden to travel to smaller communities to try and tout his administration's policies to hopefully give an edge to Vice President Kamala Harris in November. It's also something we're seeing by the Trump campaign targeting smaller communities. But whether, we made a point where not really a good chance that Harris could win the 3rd Congressional District where this area is, but it's all about picking up as many votes as possible heading into November.
Yeah, we always talk about the math. So the Western Wisconsin, Trump won it in 2016, talking about the 3rd Congressional District. He'll likely win it again. But if Harris can narrow the gap enough, it creates other pathways to winning Wisconsin. We're counting on Dane County being a blue, deep blue turnout machine. So there, Republicans want to minimize the damage, right? But if she can get Dane County turnout the way it has been, Milwaukee to stay stable, the suburbs to stay stable, and minimize the loss in Western Wisconsin, well, you've got a better path to winning Wisconsin. Much like Trump going up north, same deal. It's all about the math. Now, for Democrats, the brand in what rural Wisconsin has cratered, just like it has nationally. I don't want to sound like I'm old, but I remember when Democrats used to represent rural Wisconsin. There are lots of members of the assembly outstate who had rural districts. They don't exist anymore. So for Democrats, you're trying to start a message of, hey, we have policies that benefit you in rural Wisconsin. This program, Dairyland Cooperative is the beneficiary of these grants in Wisconsin. Going to leverage this money for a $2.1 billion investment overall in clean energy. They're trying to say, look, clean energy is not just for like people in Madison and Milwaukee. It's going to help rural Wisconsin. It's going to benefit you with jobs. And with investments, this is a good thing to try and build back the reputation a little bit because it's kind of gone away in rural Wisconsin.
Right. And during his remarks, Biden tried to sell it like that, too. Your energy costs are going to be lower, and we're hoping it's going to give you a little bit of breathing room at the end of the day. Now, of course, this isn't something that's going to be implemented in a year or so. This takes time. But that's the message that he's trying to sell to voters, because we know the economy is a very tough issue for Democrats right now, given they're in the White House. It's an issue that Vice President Kamala Harris has tried to talk about. She's put out her economic plans, but hasn't really answered how she would pay for it. And that's probably something that we're going to hear next week a little bit more when Harris and former President Donald Trump debate one another on Tuesday. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But moving on to earlier in the week on Labor Day, Harris's running mate, Governor of Minnesota Tim Walz, rallied union workers at where else to be at Labor Fest, because this is a prominent area that we've seen Biden was at in 2020. Former President Barack Obama has been there before. And this is all part of their push to tout policies that they've enacted over the years, say, hey, we're here for you, we want to work for you, we support unions. So he headlined Labor Day Festival, and during his remarks, Walz touted his record as Minnesota governor on worker issues, such as laws he signed guaranteeing paid and medical leave, as well as touting a ban on businesses that businesses can no longer call a meeting to discuss forming a union. Let's first just take a listen to Walz's remarks in Milwaukee.
When unions are strong, America is strong. We know that in Minnesota. As governor of Minnesota, it was my privilege to sign one of the biggest and best pro-worker packages in Minnesota history. We made it easier to form a union, not harder. We strengthened worker protections. You should be able to go home at the end of the day without getting killed on the job. That's a basic line. And in Minnesota, it's against the law to put your workers in a room and do an anti-union meeting. You can't do that.
Well, Democrats are very heavily relying on union workers to help them get an edge in November. We've also seen inroads by former President Donald Trump, as Republicans are also trying to win over union workers as well. But one thing that's really interesting in this entire mix is one of the biggest unions was his Teamsters. They spoke at the Republican National Convention. They traditionally have always backed Democratic presidential candidates. They're not quite there yet. They say they want to hear more from Harris. So that's kind of the wild card in all of this. While, yes, you can rely on a lot of union workers to back Democrats, this is the big question mark heading into the fall of whether they will endorse in this race.
Yeah, and Democrats, unions in general are backing Democrats, Harris, but it's leadership. The problem is the rank and file for Democrats. They're losing them on a number of issues, especially cultural issues, to Donald Trump. Looking at the visits on Monday, they went to the quote-unquote blue wall, right? Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, stops there by Harris, Walz, and Biden. Looking at those three states, Michigan and Pennsylvania are in the top 15 in the country for the number of union workers. Wisconsin's dropped down to the bottom 20. The difference in Wisconsin is, of course, Act 10 in 2011, followed by Right to Work, helped decimate the rolls. But still, we have a labor tradition here in Wisconsin. They're trying to kind of connect with those workers. So again, the challenge for Democrats is, can you get the rank and file to turn out for you, not just those who are, you know, the leadership are backing your campaign.
Right. It's just, once again, another crucial demographic that both campaigns are fighting for. You know, there's women, there's men, there's African-American voters. It's all up for grabs, especially here in the battleground state. Looking ahead to next week, we also just want to talk about the former president coming back to Wisconsin. He's going to hold a rally in Mosinee. He was also there 4 years ago in 2020 at an airport hangar. I would guess it's probably the same area for that. And Mosinee is in central Wisconsin, which is just near Wausau and Stevens Point. The campaign has only told us so far that he's going to talk about the economy, of course, an issue that in several polls say that he would do a better job. I would say most voters believe he would do a better job at. But, you know, this is another area that he needs his supporters to show up in.
Yeah, the math again, the Wausau market has gotten redder over the years. Trump needs to excite that base, get them to turn out, because we've seen the Republican numbers in southeastern Wisconsin, the suburbs, those wild counties, on a downward trajectory. How does Trump offset that? Now, there are only so many voters outside Wisconsin. So the challenge is not just to elevate, get them excited, but also you got to stem the tide in the suburbs. You cannot keep going down. If Trump's below 60% in Waukesha County election night, he's in trouble. I don't care how well he does in Wausau. Like, that's a voter-rich area. And so for Trump, there's a math issue here. He's got to do a better up north to offset the suburbs, stem the tide there, and then Dane County. He can't get 18% in Dane County on election night. He's got to get somewhere in the 20s to help him give a shot to win Wisconsin come election day.
Right, and of course, this is one of a series of visits that either himself has been here, Wisconsin, his running mate, J.D. Vance, you know, Harris, Walz, the list goes on of how many people, even surrogates that are flooding the state, barnstorming Wisconsin, because we know the state is very important in this election. And what I'm getting at is, because after all of these visits, after both conventions, we're going to get our first look on Wednesday of whether if that has made a difference with voters, with a new Marquette University Law School poll coming out on Wednesday.
Yeah, so we usually see a bounce for people at a convention. These were odd conventions. You had Trump before the convention with the assassination attempt, then what was a pretty well-run convention that had pretty good messaging, people felt like. There was a sense Trump came out of that in really strong position. Then Biden drops out. There was a bump for Harris because Biden along the nominee and Democrats rallied to her. We've seen other polling that shows Democrats more excited to vote in Wisconsin and elsewhere with Harris than they were with Biden. So will this poll show a post-convention bump for Harris, or has the bump already occurred because of the rallying effect after Biden dropped out?
And then kind of moving from Wednesday, next Tuesday is the presidential debate that, of course, is going to get a lot of eyeballs, I would assume, given after the first one didn't go so well and led to President Biden dropping out of the race. But also, this is a true test, right? Republicans have been criticizing Harris for not doing sit-down interviews. She had her first one last week with CNN, but that wasn't live per se. There were snippets of it throughout the interview. So this will be a test for her, but also will be for the former president, as the mics will be muted. We know We've talked about the policies before. How will his demeanor be on the debate stage? And you don't want to have one of those viral moments, either good or bad. Usually good ones help you out on social media, but you don't want the bad ones to resurface.
So look, the stage has been set for Harris by Republicans. They keep saying she can't string a sentence together coherently. She talks in word salads. Will she be disciplined in her answers? Will she give clear, concise answers to the questions asked to her? For Trump, Biden's troubles answering questions overshadowed that Trump is not coherent or succinct, I guess a nice way to put it at times, and how he answers questions. There was an answer this week at an economic forum about childcare that if you followed the actual answer, it went from point A to point D to C to D to E to F, before it got to the end, saying that tariffs will pay for childcare and solve the deficit somehow. So what I'm getting at is Trump needs to be a little more focused in his answers because now he doesn't have Biden to kind of hide those issues that he's been having. So do either of them come out looking better or worse, or that viral moment that really kind of changed the trajectory of the race? Biden's a standalone moment. Like we're talking, that's an unusual moment in our history with like that kind of performance being so bad, you drop out. I don't expect that kind of a moment on Tuesday, but could they elevate themselves somehow and put them in a better trajectory than they're at right now?
Right, and one thing I'm going to be watching for is how direct are their answers to the questions. You know, oftentimes, even in La Crosse Town Hall last week, Trump was asked about the economy or what are you going to do on crime from voters in Wisconsin, and he used that opportunity to criticize Tim Walz. He used the opportunity to criticize Harris. We know also this is our first time Harris is actually going to be in a room with Donald Trump. They've never actually met one another. Of course, they know who each other are very well. So it's going to be pretty fascinating to watch. All right, moving on to our next topic, which is related to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. filing a lawsuit in Dane County seeking to remove his name from the ballot. And this is also kind of tying into our conversation about the Marquette Law School poll, because it's going to be interesting whether voters even know that he's trying to remove his name off the ballot.
So look at the numbers for RFK before. He was at 16% back in January, dropped to 8% this summer. So now he's not running. He's endorsed Trump. He's on the ballot. So will we see a big shift for him? I mean, there are a lot of low-information voters who aren't watching us every week, tied in everything going on. They might still think RFK is running and vote for him. They're RFK supporters. You also have the option, if you're a Republican, that maybe you're not happy with Trump and you can't quite pull a trigger for him or for Harris, but RFK is like a protest vote. We'll see there. Now with the lawsuit, so RFK has gone to Dane County Court and said he wants off the ballot. He's made this point that there's a different treatment of third-party candidates like himself than there are for Democrats and Republicans, which is true. But there are different methodology in the ballot. So remember, if you're a Democrat or Republican and you're running for president, you are nominated at your convention and your party certifies you for the ballot. You have ballot status in Wisconsin because you've hit certain benchmarks. For independents, you have to turn in nomination papers, collect 2,000 signatures at least, turn them into the Elections Commission by August 6th this year, then the commission reviews them and puts you on the ballot. There is no mechanism to withdraw those papers as a candidate. The lawsuit argues that's unfair because Biden was going to be the nominee, right, went through a primary process, and the Democrats said, no, he's not going to run anymore. We're putting Harris in the ballot. There, he's saying, look, if he can withdraw, why can't I? The deadline is earlier for me, August 6th. That's not fair. The Democrats always had until the first Tuesday in September to withdraw a candidate if they wanted to. Why should I be treated differently? It might be a good point. The challenge is timing. So this lawsuit was filed 4 years to the day after the Green Party sued 4 years ago to get on the ballot. Remember, there was an issue with their nomination papers and with the third party route, the independent route, get on the ballot. Their vice presidential candidate had moved during the process and had different addresses listed on nomination papers. The commission said that's not good. We can't certify these. Deadlocked 3-3. The court, Supreme Court of Wisconsin, ruled in mid-September it's too late. You guys wait too long to file this lawsuit. Ballots have been printed. We have a deadline, September 18th, for county clerks to have ballots in the hands of municipal clerks. Those municipal clerks have a deadline of September 19th to start sending them out to be able to absentee ballot requests. Ballots are being printed as we speak. I've talked to clerks this week who are actually at the printer dropping stuff off to get printed. So what I'm getting at with this lawsuit is, as of this morning, I checked the court file right before I came over here, there wasn't even a hearing scheduled yet, the Dane County judge who got the case. If we even have something next week, we're talking ballots being printed while they'd even start the case. So people I talked to this week think the timing is going to kill this lawsuit. It might wither on the vine, in their words. But there's an interesting question that could be answered maybe down the road of, like, is that a fair treatment? this is not very vehicle to ask that question because it's kind of too late in the process, people argue to me.
Right, and we know our court systems. Yes. I mean, sometimes when it comes to election matters, those are, you know, they try to quickly resolve those as best as they can. But, you know, he's even, you know, tried to go to the state Supreme Court, and they have said, that was just last week, they dismissed taking the case. So he's now trying all other avenues to do this. He's also doing this in other states, too, trying to now remove his name from the ballot. So it would be interesting how this shakes up. But as you mentioned, I mean, the clock is ticking.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our next topic, which is about the Department of Public Instruction, as they have kind of changed their format when it comes to statewide standard tests. So Jill Underley, who is the state superintendent of schools, defended changes that I just mentioned that is taken by students in grades 3rd through 8th grade. Now, the overhaul of what they did with the Ford exam lowers the cut scores between groups, and it changes the terminology used to describe student performance. So during her first interview since DPI put out these changes, Underley told CBS 58 that the changes would provide a more accurate picture of how students fared on the test. So let's just take a listen to how she defended this, and then I'll actually get into some of the terminology that has been changed.
I think it's clear for parents to understand and educators to understand now with the change. And I chuckled because when you use the word basic, I mean, that's almost an insult, right? Like, you're basic. And so what, you know, the change does, it changes it to a growth mindset. I feel, again, like this is easier to understand where kids are and where they stand on the spectrum of learning. And it also, again, you know, like the scores, puts us into alignment with what other states are using for their language, too, which makes it less confusing overall. How we do assessment and interpreting assessment scores, a parent myself, it's really difficult to understand these scores. And again, it's my world, and you know, I struggle with that. But I feel that when I talk to my son or my daughter's teacher and they say your son is developing in this skill, I feel then, you know, that's that growth mindset. It's, you know, certainly giving us a goal to work forward.
So you just heard Underley try to defend the terminology. I'm just gonna walk you through this. This is what it was before and what it changed to. So it used to be you are considered advanced, that's the same. Proficient now is that you're meeting. Basic was approaching. And if you're below basic, you're just developing. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of the criticism that you received, that if you're a parent and you're seeing that, oh, my student is developing, you think it's a work in progress. But the terminology before was that you're below, you're not quite there. So mm-hmm. that's why some have criticized this new one. But what's interesting too, we asked Governor Tony Evers about this, who of course was the former state superintendent in school, who enacted the previous standards back in 2012 when he was superintendent. He told reporters that he does not support lowering these test scores. And so that's pretty different that, you know, you have one agency and one thing and he's not agreeing with it.
Watch for legislation next spring. I've already seen some lawmakers say we're going to address this in the next session. What always gets tricky is getting Republican lawmakers and Governor Evers on board the same bill. Now, again, assuming that Republicans control the legislature after this fall's elections, but if they do, they pass a bill, does Governor Evers want to sign that bill to change the standard?
And there's also just been a lot of criticism in general about the test scores and how students are not doing quite well in mm-hmm. a lot of schools. A lot of course, attention is always focused on Milwaukee Public Schools, but there's also a lot of students across the entire state that are still not just up to those reading standards. We've tried to see some bills to pump more resources into the system. We've also changed like to a hooked on phonics approach. There's been steps taken. It's just about how long is it going to take to see some of that progress going forward. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to our last topic this week, and we're going to look at some ad spending in the U.S. Senate race as Ad Impact has dived into some of the numbers, and this is something that you always track too, JR, at Wiz Politics. So if you take a look at your screen, this is in the 4 weeks of that started after Wisconsin's August 13th primary and spending between the matchup between Tammy Baldwin and Eric Hovde. So from even when that started, according to Ad Impact, they were pretty even. But now it looks like Hovde is a little bit above at $13.2 million. Tammy's at $12.6 million. But however, from Wednesday until the November 5th election, it looks like Baldwin and her supporters are going to be spending a lot more money, in the little bit above $30 million.
Yeah, so look, right now, and these numbers get adjusted every day essentially, but right now, it's about a 7-1 advantage for reservations from this week through November in favor of Baldwin. And that's not just Baldwin, but other groups. So looking at the numbers that were spent the first 4 weeks after the primary, the spending was a little bit of an edge for Hovde. Also, talk about gross ratings points, basically how often they're seen, also an edge to Hovde. But why this gap? Why this drop-off from this week until November? Well, I've heard a couple of theories from people. One, don't forget Eric Hovde is a very wealthy individual. Republicans recruited several wealthy people to run for office in various key Senate races. It could be a thing of trying to pressure him to spend more of his own money to keep things going. We've already seen he's accounted for 3/4 of the money he's raised so far in this campaign. So it's not like chump change. He's put real money in. But when you look at the map, so West Virginia is going to pretty much flip no matter what. I mean, that's almost a goner for Democrats for sure. They're trying to hold on in Ohio and Montana. If they lose either of those and West Virginia, the Senate is gone. Then you go to the next tier, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Nevada, Wisconsin. Right now, the polling shows Pennsylvania is maybe a better place to go. Trump's doing better in Pennsylvania than he is in Wisconsin. So as I'm seeing ad buys nationally, more money is going there. What I'm getting at is the question is, where are the resources going to go? What's the priority? And right now, Wisconsin's not the top priority in terms of a pickup for Republicans. So maybe you're trying to have to spend. The other theory is that these outside groups are weighing, okay, where do I want to go? They're going to take some time and have a pause and check some polling and other stuff and go, okay, I'm going to invest here. So we saw one poll from Emerson, I think last week, they added a one-point race in the Senate campaign. That's been an outlier so far. Most polls we've seen have been like 5-6 points in Baldwin's favor. So that poll actually was kind of good news for Baldwin in an odd way because she's been raising money off it left and right, saying this is a real race. But what I'm watching is, do these groups come back in sometime soon? The longer they wait, the more expensive it gets. So what happens is there's only a finite amount of minutes for ads. As reservations are taken up in Wisconsin for not just a presidential race, or the Senate race, but for the state Senate, state assembly, congressional races, mm-hmm. they get more expensive. The longer you wait, the more expensive it is, the less farther your dollar goes. So Baldwin getting in early and laying out some money right now gives her a huge advantage in terms of the points that you will see from her campaign or the final weeks of the race.
And also, speaking of the ads in the U.S. Senate race, one was denounced recently by the Waukesha County, the Waukesha mayor, because it was a group that is backing Hovde put out an ad that tied Baldwin to the Waukesha Christmas Parade incident. Of course, that was a very sensitive topic to many people in this community. It still is. So the Waukesha mayor condemned the ad. Now it's been kind of, you know, getting muddied in the waters. I don't know if it's going to be removed, but it's something that's made some headlines this week.
Yeah, One Nation, it's a super PAC kind of affiliated with Mitch McConnell, who is a Republican leader in the U.S. Senate. Basically, it brought up what happened in November of 2021, the vote that Baldwin took in August of 2022 to try and tie her into it, because it's a sensitive topic, and it goes back to this crime issue that Republicans want to make, that they're arguing that Democrats are soft on crime, that there's a danger here that you want to blame Democrats for. I'm not sure it's fair to blame Baldwin for what happened in November of 2021 when the vote she took was months after. But the bottom line is they're using this sensitive topic and footage from it in an ad. Is that going to backfire? Will it resonate with people and have them remember, I'm not happy about this and Baldwin's bad on crime? So watching for that, but also big picture, where's this spending coming from? Eric Hovde? Is it in his own pocket? Or groups come back and help him out in
all right.
Weeks?
And last point we want to make, of course, is the MU poll. Of course, we'll be looking at the head-to-head matchup between them as the results will be out Wednesday. There was a CNN poll this week that had 51-45 for Hovde. So that's good.
For Baldwin.
But Baldwin's been ahead in all the Marquette polls so far. It just depends how much closer is Hovde going to be, or is it going to widen? Who knows?
And it will shift again. Yeah. We're talking post-convention now, any bounces. And really for Baldwin, we know she's running ahead of the top of the ticket. She did that in 2018. A little different when you're talking about a presidential race and a Senate race. If I remember correctly, no candidate for U.S. Senate has won in Wisconsin since 1968, when the candidate from the opposite party won the presidential race. It was Nixon and Gaylord Nelson, if I remember correctly. So if Trump wins Wisconsin and Baldwin wins, she'd be breaking a trend that's almost, 60 years old.
Right, and there's also been, Hovde been continually attacking Baldwin for not doing enough debates, but that's also going to be interesting when more polling comes out to see if that will give Hovde a little bit more name recognition. That debate is going to be hosted by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association in October, so probably won't see, that making a difference, of course, because this poll on Wednesday will come up before the debate, but that is something that we're just seeing also a trend to. There's less debates nowadays because it's more of a risk. Baldwin doesn't see the need to do them. She actually explained last weekend that one of the reasons she doesn't want to do 2, 3, 4 debates is because the Wisconsin Broadcasters one is going to be broadcasted statewide, whereas other ones are going to be in smaller markets, but not as big of an audience. But
she doesn't want to do more one because it gives a risk.
Look,
every front runner knows don't give your challenger oxygen. Back in 2022, Evers had won against Tim Michaels. Wasn't a great performance by Tony Evers. Didn't hurt him in the end. Wasn't a viral moment that got into ads. For Baldwin, why give Hovde oxygen? He's trailing. They're fairly confident right now. The ad buys are tilting in their favor. They feel good. For Hovde, you've got to change, shake things up. A debate is an opportunity to be on the same stage as the person you're challenging. Go back to 2022. Ron Johnson and Mandela Barnes had 2 at the time. That was an interesting dynamic, though, because the feeling was that Barnes would do poorly in debates and Johnson wanted more, and Barnes agreed to 2. In the end, Barnes did pretty well. It was, some people argue, a mistake in this part not to do more debates, but that's neither here nor there. My point is, 1 or 2, about the most you're going to get going forward. We used to have 3 presidential debates every cycle. Now we're down to 1. It's just, again, it's more about the ads and the appearances that you can control than it is about the debate that you can't control anymore.
That's a lot of political strategy behind it all. All right, that will do it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.